From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Joining me on the program is VOA international broadcaster and current affairs producer, Kim Lewis. Our topic on this edition of the program, commemorating International Women's Day and Women's History Month, honoring and celebrating the vital role of women in American history. Our guest, Ambassador Gina Abercrombie Winstanley, former U.S. Ambassador to the Republic of Malta and the longest-serving U.S. Ambassador to that small, strategically located European island country. A 30-year diplomat, Ambassador Abercrombie Winstanley has had a long and distinguished career in public service. She has held numerous senior positions, including advisor to the commander of U.S. cyber forces on foreign policy priorities, deputy coordinator for counterterrorism, special assistant to the Secretary of State for Middle East and Africa, and chairwoman for Middle East Area Studies at the Foreign Service Institute. She has also held senior positions at the Defense Department and at the White House National Security Council. Prior to that, she was a fellow on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee for then-ranking member Senator Joe Biden, currently a contender in the Democratic race for president in 2020. Throughout her career, Ambassador Abercrombie Winstanley has done extensive work advocating for diversity and inclusion, including a mission to Saudi Arabia, where she actively supported gender equality in the region. She is also co-chair and founder of LCWINS, the Leadership Council of Women in National Security, and that's an organization which advances gender equity in the national security workforce, especially its leadership. She has moderated discussions at respected international think tanks on issues ranging from U.S. Mideast policy, the importance of diversity and inclusion in U.S. foreign policymaking, cybersecurity challenges, and counterterrorism. Ambassador Abercrombie Winstanley is currently diplomat in residence in Oberlin College in the state of Ohio. And she joins us here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Madam Ambassador, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And of course, I'm delighted to welcome my special colleague, Kim Lewis, our current affairs producer and booker.
Thanks, Carol. Good to be here.
Well, Ambassador Abercrombie Winstanley, we're so happy to have you as we celebrate and commemorate International Women's Day. I want you to talk first about your many years in the Republic of Malta. How do you see the importance of Malta over the years and what you learned from your experience there?
Well, Malta is an extraordinary country, as you mentioned. It has a very strategic position in the Mediterranean. Part of our bilateral relationship focused on training, search and rescue missions, maritime training. And we reached out to other navies in the region, from Morocco, from Libya, from Tunisia, to do training there. And the United States and Malta had a great partnership. Working with resettling refugees is another part of the relationship that we have with Malta. It is the only nation in the European Union where the United States actively resettles refugees from. First, they go to Malta, they go through a two-year screening period, and then come into the United States. We had a very close cooperation on counterterrorism issues, again, because of where they're located and their membership in the European Union. So we worked together on a lot of really important issues. And then, of course, the country's history with having been in wars with the Ottoman Empire, with the French invasion, with the British invasion, their close relationship with the Italians. I mean, it's a very rich history.
Tell me, remind us what years you were there.
I arrived in early 2012 and I left in 2016.
Ambassador, I know you think it's very important to have women and other types of people in the national security establishment, minorities and so forth. You are co-founder of LCWINS, as we said in the introduction, and I'd like you to talk about why you think that kind of diversity enhances and strengthens our foreign and national security policy.
Like any good organization, we are strengthened when we bring a wide array of values, of experiences, of thought processes to the table in order to find solutions. The greater range of people you have discussing an issue, the greater number of options you have for finding success. If you have a bunch of people with a very similar background, you're going to have a very narrow range of things to look at, to explore. So that broader range is important. Women bring different things to the table. Minorities bring different things to the table that help make the policies coming out at the other end better, stronger, making sure that different aspects are considered as we reach that policy. National security is something that's important for every nation around the world, and obviously no nation can say they're doing it perfectly based on the state of the world today. So the more interaction we have, the broader our thought processes are, I think the more successful we can be in effecting longer-lasting solutions.
I'd like to turn to my colleague Kim for some questions.
Yes, Ambassador, you have lived in so many different regions of the world, and you've had a chance to really see some of the struggles of women in different circumstances that you might not see from here in America. So from your experience, what are some areas where women have made great strides in terms of having a voice in where they live and some areas that remain a huge challenge for them?
You're right. There are challenges around the world that American women possibly couldn't even imagine. But the thing that unites us wherever we are is our resilience and our strength. I would say that in Saudi Arabia, which of course has made some important changes in the last few years, allowing women to drive, legally allowing women to travel without the permission of a male relative, which was a perfectly ridiculous thing to have to imagine that you might have to get permission from your 14-year-old son if you did not have a husband or a father living or no brother. It would be your son who would say to you, "Mom, yes, you can travel abroad." And certainly that irritation and frustration was experienced by my Saudi friends and colleagues. Still, there are challenges for them with regard to their access to the judicial system. So there are other things that need to be done to be able to represent, be present in court, to stand up for your legal rights, to have yourself fairly represented is still a challenge in the country. And indeed, in any nation where there is a very conservative government or cultural outlook, it can be very difficult. Afghanistan would be another place. In Malta, it's a very conservative country for Europe. I think it's probably one of the most conservative in that it's got a relatively low participation rate of women in the workforce. It's growing. I had the privilege of working with three presidents of Malta while I was there. And one of them was a woman, Mary Louise Calero Preco, who was really strong for women and family rights and did a great deal to forward that, those rights. So it was good to see that.
Good. And you also mentioned earlier refugees.
Yeah.
So how are refugee women? What are some of the things that they're doing or what's being done to help empower them?
Well, again, the most important thing is for women to know our rights, so that we can advocate for ourselves. But as a refugee, you are so vulnerable for violence. As you know, women and children are far more vulnerable for sexual violence and other forms of violence when they are unprotected on these routes from Africa, from Asia, other nations where they're coming to Europe and other countries for safety. There are challenges for women for ensuring that they're getting the proper medical care. There are issues that way. So it really is a matter of knowing your rights, being able to advocate for yourself, and identify sources of support.
Ambassador, I'd like to get your observations about today's very polarized political climate, not just here, even in the United States, but even abroad.
Around the world.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We're seeing enormous polarization and the rise of the far right, both abroad and even here, one can say in the United States, we are witnessing the rise of white supremacist movement. So in terms of polarization, how is it qualitatively different or not, maybe, from your years as a diplomat?
It is a recent phenomena for us all to recognize it. I think white supremacy or far-right views, xenophobia has been out there forever, but our norms around the world have suppressed, if not the thought processes, the behavior, the willingness to say things out loud. It was not socially acceptable to say you don't like the other for whatever reason. And those constraints have been released. So people feel quite at ease to say, I don't want someone of a different color, of a different gender, of a different sexual orientation to be with me, near me. They shouldn't have access to, and that didn't used to be the case. The United States, as we have been brought up to value tolerance, to value individual rights, civil rights, with all of that that it encompasses, and to go around the world sharing those values, recognizing that even when we failed, we were trying to meet those values. That's the issue. And as a diplomat for 30 years, we have a very checkered history in this country, as you know. But I've always been able to say with complete honesty, we fail, but we are always trying to improve ourselves. And we look at our failures. We examine those failures. We don't try and hide them. After 9/11, when many Americans realized we'd gone too far with the Patriot Act, I was able to point out that the organization that led the first and most critical report, examination of how we were conducting ourselves after 9/11, was the Department of Justice. It was the Inspector General who said the Department of Justice has gone too far. Law enforcement in the United States has gone too far. So we looked at ourselves. We looked at ourselves when McCarthyism, anti-communism, and we were persecuting innocent people, but we held public hearings and we criticized ourselves. That I hope we're not going to lose. And this is a very difficult time for the United States. I have friends from around the world who say, you learn too much from us instead of teaching us about you. And that, as a diplomat, as an American, is very painful. And I am trusting that we will continue to look at ourselves and correct.
We'll have more in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Press Conference USA on The Voice of America. Our guest is Ambassador Gina Abercrombie Winstanley. She was the longest-serving U.S. ambassador to the Republic of Malta. She has held numerous senior national security and foreign policy positions throughout the U.S. government. I'm Carol Castiel, along with VOA international broadcaster and our current affairs producer, Kim Lewis. This is a reminder that our Press Conference USA podcast is available for free download on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA. Here's a big shout out to a loyal listener, Faisal Jadi from Swat, Pakistan. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to PCUSA@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Back to our special guest, Ambassador Gina Abercrombie Winstanley. Let me ask you, Madam Ambassador, picking up on what Kim said earlier about refugees, the challenges for females. Another setback here, many would say, in the United States is the fact that the United States is taking fewer and fewer refugees since World War II. And we know that President Trump is very much at the forefront of this particular policy and also trying to reduce immigration, even legal immigration. To what extent does this concern you, since really immigrants and refugees have been the backbone of this country, have enriched our country, and those who advocate for them are not saying we want open borders and no rules, but they're saying where we're going now, we're going backwards, back to the 1920s, or with respect to trade even, back to the 1950s with our anti-trade policies. Again, not saying that we shouldn't have fair trade agreements, but to try to impose tariffs and so forth. Again, I'm sort of conflating everything, but what is your view in particular vis-a-vis refugees and immigration?
The United States has been a leader around the world advocating for refugees. It has been a position that has allowed us to get other countries to help as well. And this has been extraordinarily important. No one should think we believe that we have taken the most refugees around the world, because we haven't. The countries that take the most refugees are those that are adjacent to the hotspots. And so it's Turkey, it's Pakistan, it's Lebanon, it's Jordan. Those are the countries that are bearing the full brunt of the presence of refugees. And of course, most refugees want to go home again. So they don't want to come to the United States or to Europe. And so the fact that we can help and should help, it's been part of our basic fiber in the United States to help others and to recognize the value of immigrants. Again, we've been here before. Xenophobia crops up in every nation now and again. I'm certain are going to correct on this one as well, because we need them. And I know there have been reports in recent days where I believe the acting chief of staff was overheard saying that we need immigrants. We've got to have people working in our factories, living in our homes. I'm living in Ohio right now, in a state that has seen a little increase in population, but not nearly as much as there are homes that are empty. So we're going to correct on this, I feel very strongly, but we have to keep speaking truth. We have to make sure that people understand that when there are job losses, for the vast majority of cases, it is not immigrants coming in, it is technology that is changing the type of jobs that are out there. And we've got to have those who are advocating for greater technology, those who are captains of industry, to think hard about what are the people that are being made redundant, being unemployed, what are they going to do? We've got to find jobs for people who are losing their work to technology.
Indeed, and they have to be retrained.
Absolutely.
And that should be our policy. Yeah.
Yes, and this is going to really lead right into my question regarding technology and what role it is playing today, especially regarding women and how it influences people. It changes people's behavior. It changes their thought process. I mean, technology really is a big influencer today. So how does it affect the role of women?
It's a double-edged sword. It can give you a greater voice, a farther reach using technology, using social media of many sorts, but it also can be used against women to abuse us, to intimidate us, to make us afraid, and to drive us, in fact, from public space. When people flame you, when trolls come after you because you're speaking your position, your truth on social media, and people don't like what's being heard. I've noticed it because I'm a huge science fiction fan, and hearing some of the concerns about more women and more minorities in roles that were traditionally held by European American men or European men. And I remember reading a commentary from someone who is in the Star Trek universe commenting that anyone complaining that there's a woman captain or a woman lead in a Star Trek universe, that is what Star Trek was about. And if you're really a fan, you cannot disagree with it. You can't complain about it. That should be what you can expect. So women have been able to take our place, I think, more so in technology fields, but we've been there all along. In coding, in computers, for instance, some of the most famous and most adept coders were women at the very beginning of this industry. So the work now is to make sure that knowledge is known, and that's so often the way. For minorities and for women, we've been there, but the history has not been shared.
Yes, I think one of them just passed away. She worked for NASA. She was 101 years old.
That's right, from Hidden Figures.
Yes.
Yeah, a great movie, but she is a great example of women's important role that has not been sufficiently publicized. And we're working on that now. I know a young woman who's working on getting Wikipedia pages up for women in the past and women now, to just put it out there what we're doing in the sphere of national security, in the sphere of arts, etc., because we don't get enough publicity.
That's right. And also, I think men have to realize that women aren't taking their places. We're in a competitive environment. Women are reaching these positions on their merit, and even more so because it's more, they are discriminated against often. And so I think some in particular, white males are, you know, concerned. But look, women have been discriminated against, have not had the same opportunities. And it's not a lack of opportunity. Everyone has to work for what they earn.
Absolutely. And the other half of that is that space is being made for men to broaden what they get to do as well. Certainly for both of our children, because I was the lead in our career with my husband. He's an engineer, but he followed me around the world for 30 years. And I will be honest, to a little bit of envy, when our daughter was an infant and he got to spend more time with her than I did. And I had to recognize that as well. You know, it's a mixed bag for everyone. We've got to find what roles work best for us. As anyone will tell you, within a marriage, there's only two people, and you have to make it work how it works for you. Sometimes it's more or less traditional. Mine was less traditional. But we have two grown-up children. They're alive and sane, and so, yay.
Ambassador, I wanted to ask you back to what we're witnessing with the bureaucracy here in the United States, the backbone of our government, in a sense, public servants working for the government. We're seeing now what some call retribution in the wake of President Trump's so-called acquittal by the Senate. He has since criticized and fired many civil servants, diplomats who were responding to legally enforced subpoenas and agreed to give truthful testimony to the House of Representatives during the impeachment inquiry. Are you worried about the type of vengeance that he has directed at, for example, Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, a Purple Heart recipient who was recently walked out of the White House simply for testifying? Even Trump mega donor Gordon Sondland, who was summarily removed from his ambassadorship to the EU because he testified negatively but in effect truthfully about President Trump's behavior. Are you worried about this type of potential deleterious effects on our society and even the integrity of our democratic government?
I will say that with regard to the retribution against those who testified in the impeachment trial of the president, in fact, we've had 2+ years, 3 years that our expectations should not have been any different about what would happen as a result. That said, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, I think, will be fine even if his work in the White House was terminated early. And with regard to Sondland, as a political appointee particularly, but even as a professional diplomat ambassador, we serve at the pleasure of the president. So at any time, if the president says, you no longer are my representative, then you're done as an ambassador. And it can be done for any reason. It is deeply troubling to have the civil service afraid to tell the truth. That is their job. They work for the American people. They take an oath to the Constitution, not to an individual. I believe strongly that this too shall pass, and that this is an opportunity, as bad as it appears to be now, to look at what we have laid out, what we thought we had with regard to our checks and balances, and to recognize that they're only as good as the reasonable person in the White House allows them to be, or as only as good as the Congress is willing to do its job. Because if the Congress were doing its job, we would not be in this situation. Different things would have happened.
Well, speaking of that, Madam Ambassador, speaking of the Congress, the Republican-controlled Senate is currently refusing to take up legislation to safeguard our elections, particularly to thwart outside interference from nefarious actors like Russia in particular, who was clearly the culprit in interfering in the 2016 elections, regardless of what President Trump says. This was confirmed by 11 intelligence agencies. So I'm curious about your optimism, because if the Republican-controlled Senate is refusing to take up legislation, refuses to acknowledge that this is a threat to our democracy, I'm wondering, where do you get your optimism?
I get my optimism because we have an election coming up, and we'll see what the American people think about this. The press has been largely doing its job by informing us, but we also have to do our own due diligence. We all know that our knowledge, our information is siloed, and we have to take on that responsibility to ensure that we're hearing from a variety of sources of information so that we can make our own decisions. I think there's enough information out there. People understand, really, that things have been tampered with. Some believe it. Most people believe it. Some don't. I recognize that. But an election is coming, and the American people will speak, and it's going to shape the future of our nation, and we'll see what we want for ourselves. It's really up to us. I think we're going to do the right thing, but we'll see.
Indeed. Well, just to follow up quickly, because what we're seeing is the Republican Party in particular is adopting some of the same conspiracy theories that the Russians are floating about, you know, whether that it was Ukraine, not Russia, who interfered in 2016 and many other things. So it's one thing that we're having foreign interference across the social media platform, the lack of safeguarding, let's say, the hardware of our elections by refusing to pass legislation to bolster our
election security.
Exactly.
Absolutely, yeah.
But we're seeing, you know, some of this very disinformation coming right from those who are engaged in the elections. So whether it's the Republican Party or whomever working on their behalf is spreading these kinds of disinformation.
Yeah. Well, I think we all understand from for one reason or another that we need better controls over those companies that provide those social media platforms, whether it is because they are refusing to put in place, they're making lots of money, so it's not like they're short of money.
But that's precisely why they're not doing anything.
Exactly. I understand that. So it is going to take legislation to effect that change, to better protect our privacy, to give us real control over whether we want to be tracked, over whether we want our information shared, and over whether our information should be monetized for others as opposed to ourselves. We need the Congress to take up legislation for that, and election security is a very, very important part of it. There are a number of organizations that are advising Republican and Democratic members of Congress and staff so they better understand what the cost and what possible solutions are for many of these technology, social media related problems are. And the most important thing is to get them to understand what's going on, because many don't even know what questions to ask. So that's where we're starting now, and that's underway. I hope nothing horrible has to happen before we put in place better controls. History suggests that it might, but hope springs eternal.
And also, on just looking at that situation in this age of information, what advice would you give young women who are wanting to, you know, maybe go into the government or who want to go into politics and may be in a country where they don't have the same freedoms as in Western countries? What advice would you give them in terms of telling the truth and speaking out, either suppressing or giving information?
Well, the first thing I would say for any young woman anywhere, United States or any other country, is that we always have to do our homework. We always have to have a good understanding of the circumstances in which we want to flourish. So that means knowing where the power centers are, knowing what is acceptable behavior, and then pushing the envelope on that, because you got to make change, and that means you are going to have to step beyond accepted bounds. But those change daily. Doing the homework, making sure that you have a good support system around you, I'd say personally, even as important as professionally, because there are times when you are going to feel that you made no progress at all or you were sent two big steps back. And that's when you need to go and gather yourself, re-energize your spirit to start again, not to give up, because there are examples in history throughout the world of women who have done extraordinary things in the face of great opposition. So the examples are out there for us. Put those in our minds, recognize that we can do more.
Now, you've had an extraordinary life, so what would you like your legacy to be?
I am hoping to leave behind many, many empowered young women who understand, yes, we can do it. We can do it. Step out of our way. That we're going to be part of the solution. That we can make things better for this world. Step out of our way and let us do it. And if you can't let us, step out of our way, because we're going to do it.
Well, on that very hopeful and positive note, I'd like to thank Ambassador Gina Abercrombie Winstanley. She's the former U.S. Ambassador to the Republic of Malta, now a public speaker and foreign affairs consultant. Madam Ambassador, thank you so much for your time and terrific insights. As we honor Women's History Month, you certainly exemplify the vital role of women in American history and foreign policy.
Thank you. It was a privilege.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington. Thanks to Kim Lewis for booking our guest. And our engineer was Al Santos. And joining me on the program was VOA international broadcaster and current affairs producer Kim Lewis. I'm Carol Castiel. Please join us again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.